The Woach Pod is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Season 2 of the ESPN Investigates podcast is now available. The Running Man tells the story of an obscure former Olympian and alleged serial sexual predator and how a 14-month ESPN investigation brought him out of the shadows. More than 50 men were physically abused and mentally manipulated by their coach for over 40 years. Until they banded together decades later to find justice. Subscribe and listen now to ESPN Investigates wherever you get your podcasts. Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod. My guest today, ESPN NBA reporter Tim McMahon. We talk about Daryl Morey's move to the Philadelphia 76ers, the Rockets hiring of Stephen Silas, and the future of James Harden with the Rockets, and the Utah Jazz sold from the Miller family after 35 years to a tech billionaire who's a native of Salt Lake, a fan of the Jazz, Ryan Smith, and the start of next season and what that looks like, what's at stake for the NBA, all of that and more with the great Tim McMahon. Stay with us.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand slams, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date list of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Welcome into Tim McMahon, ESPN's NBA reporter out there in the Western Conference. Tim, how are you, man?
I am doing all right, Woj. How about you? You had a busy day.
Yeah, busy day, a lot of news, around teams that you spend a great deal of your expertise on, starting with Daryl Morey going to the Sixers as their new president. Stephen Silas will be the new head coach with the Rockets, and Ryan Smith is on tap to be the new owner of the Utah Jazz. He's buying the team for $1.66 billion. From the Miller family, who have owned the Jazz for over 30 years, 35 years now, once that's approved by the Board of Governors. But let's start with Daryl Morey going to the Sixers. Tim, it was Daryl was just talking about wanting to take a gap year with his college-age kids. They were going to be off. He was going to be off. He was going to spend a year with them, and then he would maybe look to get back in. But that gap year turned into like a 2 weeks.
Yeah, got a gap a week or two. And Who knows? Maybe Daryl was around those kids long enough, and maybe it's like my relationship with my daughters are like, okay, we've had enough of you. Can you go back to work? Can you go do something?
Yeah, and so he goes to Philly. He and Doc Rivers now, who was recently hired as head coach, who Daryl was part of trying to convince to come to the Rockets right after he left the Clippers. But I do know Doc Rivers is a big fan of Daryl Morey's. He's looking forward to working with him with the Sixers. I think he was very much behind that hiring. They have history together in Boston, going back to Daryl's pre-Rocket days in the Celtics front office. And so they've known each other there. And obviously, Austin Rivers, Doc's son, played with the Rockets the last couple of years. But pretty remarkable transformation for the Sixers. And now the you know, for a fan base that really always did love Sam Hinkie, who's still in a lot of ways long for the, I don't know if they long for the process, but they long for Hinkie to be able to see it through. Listen, he is a disciple of Daryl Morey, and now Daryl comes in to Philly. I think it's going to be, a really interesting partnership.
It's going to be a really interesting partnership, also because that roster is kind of the, at this point, it's almost like the anti-Morey roster. If James Harden is the perfect player for Daryl Morey's kind of analytical vision of NBA basketball, what is Ben Simmons? they're pretty different. They're both left-handed, I guess, although we're not quite sure about Simmons. But it'll be very interesting. And look, that was obviously the huge question was how were they going to kind of build that roster around Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, or you know, was there going to be a decision made to go one direction or another? So those questions I think intensify with Daryl Morey coming in. And it's not that I think that he thinks that he has just one way to play. Obviously, you know, if the Rockets had Joel Embiid, I don't think they would have played small ball last season. You know, they're mm-hmm. not going to get rid of the best player. But Daryl Morey has absolutely been a guy who relies a lot on math being three-point shooting, and the Sixers are obviously ill-equipped to be a team that jacks up 40, 45, 50 threes like the Rockets have done over the last 4 years.
No, that's right. And I think if you look at, you know, the Rockets team that he built around James Harden were built to try to win around James Harden and mm-hmm. try to play to his strengths, and the hiring of Mike D'Antoni and the style he brought, and then going all the way in on small ball here. I think people sometimes forget no one really came closer in the West of beating that Warriors team than the Rockets did. They got to the conference finals a couple times. They had them in a game seven, and if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, maybe history's different, but they didn't get past them. But they were very successful. We're in the playoffs virtually every year. Daryl was there, among the winningest teams in the league over the last 8 years or so. And so, we'll see how he puts his stamp on that Sixers team. This ownership group in Philadelphia, they have been big game hunting for a high-profile, established president for years. And Elton Brand came in and did the job and did a lot of good things there and was in a position where at times there's a lot of voices in Philadelphia. There's multiple owners who have input. There is a front office that had a lot of input around Elton, and I think he tried to navigate all that the best he could, having come up pretty quickly out of his playing career, worked in the front office and made the adjustment really fast, I think, to doing the job, really working hard at it. And now I think it remains to be seen. I think the initial plan or the initial thought is that Elton may stay. He is welcome to stay. It's a question of, does it make sense for him? Obviously, Daryl, you know, when Daryl's running the team, he's running the team. And so that's a different, I think that's a conversation still for Elton Brand. I know he's well regarded by Doc and Daryl coming in and ownership. And so we'll see how that plays out. I do think Elton Brand will be, if it's not in Philly, I do think if he decides to stay in this, he will be a GM and run a team somewhere else and do it for a long time, but this ownership group wanted a big name. They had chased a bunch of them, and ironically, Daryl kind of used them as leverage a couple years ago,
right?
For the new deal in Philly, and then we all know in the last year there, it started to, I think his time there, it became clear for a bunch of reasons, was probably in the short term. I think you certainly sensed that being around there every day, Tim. That Daryl was not long for that job. Really all of last year, really since after the tweet about China, the trade for Westbrook for Chris Paul. I think there's a number of factors.
You know, it was an arranged marriage. Obviously, you know, Fertitta bought the team and Morey was still there. And then Fertitta was essentially forced into giving Daryl that huge extension. And there was a couple reasons for that. One, as part of the purchase of the team, there was a clause that Daryl and the CEO there, Tad Brown, could get out of their contracts after that first season. That was a kind of a parting gift from Leslie Alexander to two executives who were very loyal to him. And then, you know, Daryl got the interest from the 76ers, so he had a lot of leverage. And then it just, you know, that relationship, they really, I think, tried to present a united front really up until the end. I mean, they did these exit interviews with individual reporters at Daryl Morey's insistence, and that's when Morey stressed the gap year and wanted to spend time with the family and all that. But and I don't even know how much they butted heads. Certainly, Daryl insists that they didn't. He insists that Fertitta, you know, empowered him to do his job. But it's kind of a running joke around the league how, you know, the Rockets, you know, Daryl always had full power to use that mid-level exception and never, you know, never used the full thing over these last few years. Or, hey, he, you know, Tillman was always willing to pay that luxury tax, but the Rockets always managed to duck right under it. And, you know, obviously the Westbrook trade was a huge shift. And you know, I got in a little bit of trouble when I went on with Zach Lowe with some folks in Houston when I went on his podcast. And basically what I said was, this was a trade that James Harden obviously wanted, Tillman Fertitta wanted, and Daryl got done. I got a call. I'll just say I got a call from Daryl late that night saying, "Hey, that was a group decision. I just want to make it clear." But it, you know, I think that it was something where Daryl felt like it was probably a flip of the coin. But you know, that's a trade that to this point, certainly hasn't worked out. Maybe it's a completely different story if Russ doesn't get coronavirus, which I believe did impact the injury that he got in the playoffs. You know, if Russ is the guy who's averaging 32-8-8 for the 2.5 months before the season was halted, if he's that same guy in the bubble, this might be a totally different story. But that's not the way it went down. And so, you know, it's a trade that mortgaged the future of the Rockets. They owe 2 first-round picks and 2 first-round swaps. You know, and then they went even more all in with a Covington deal where they give up Capella and another first round pick. And so, you know, Daryl's leaving a situation in Houston where you've got maybe a 2-year window and then a whole lot of uncertainty to go into a situation in Philadelphia where, let's be honest, there's also a lot of uncertainty, but it feels like there's a bigger window.
Tim, how much do you think this season, the start of this season, or maybe the entirety of the season, has an impact, if at all, on James Harden's future with the Rockets?
Well, you know, what I can say is right now the Rockets are 100% committed to trying to cash in on James Harden's prime. They still consider him, you know, they consider him the best player in the league, which, you know, he's without question a perennial MVP candidate. I mean, that's just a simple fact. And they're going to try to win a championship as long as he's at that level and as long as he's on board. I think at this point it's probably a year-to-year deal. And if, you know, if I'm speculating, I'm going to say that that decision is more than likely made by James Harden instead of made by the Rockets. In other words, you know, it could get to a point, and I do not believe this is imminent. But again, I think it's a year-to-year situation where at some point James Harden, who, hey, he's tried repeatedly to pair with a superstar to give him a chance to win a championship, first with Dwight and with Chris Paul, now with Russ. You know, if James Harden wants to pair with another superstar, he's probably going to have to be the one to pack his bags. And so is that next offseason? Is that the offseason after that? You know, we'll see. And obviously a lot of that also depends on what happens with the Rockets over these next 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, so they're finalizing a deal with Stephen Silas, an assistant coach in Dallas, who's been son of Paul Silas, one of the legendary, a legendary NBA figure, is both a player and championship player and a coach. He was LeBron's first coach in Cleveland and coached in Charlotte. And he was, I think, New Orleans and Charlotte. He moved with the team, right, Tim?
Yep.
I believe Paul Silas. Yeah. And then Stephen Silas, as an assistant, going back to Charlotte again with Steve Clifford. When Steve Clifford was ill a couple of years ago, Stephen Silas was the interim coach for an extended period of time and well-respected around the league, a very even person, a lot like Mike D'Antoni in that way, very even keeled, not a real emotional, although Mike could get to be, but a very placid guy. But I think there's a toughness about him that certainly comes from his father, a really smart guy, Ivy League grad, went to Brown. And I know in Houston, they liked his vision offensively of what it might look like now in a post-D'Antoni era. And so he'll come in, and the team talked at length. The organization talked at length with Jeff Van Gundy. That was a conversation that extended really over a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. They talked a lot. And in the end, the idea of bringing Jeff back, and Jeff has been intrigued with returning to coaching. He's had opportunities through the years. I do think it was special for him to consider it in Houston, which is his home. He's been in Houston all the way back to his days as the Rockets coach. And so that didn't work out. That conversation just did not lead to, I think, Jeff and feeling like there was a fit there that just fit for him. And they were concurrently talking with Stephen Silas. And so he gets the opportunity. And now it's a daunting first job. It's daunting to walk in with James Harden and Russell Westbrook. And I think this is a challenge. This is a real challenge for Silas. And I think this is a real Rafael Stone, their new general manager in Houston, his first hire and the first hire of this ownership group as a head coach. They obviously, Mike D'Antoni was there and won a lot with him for a couple of years. But there's a lot invested now with Stephen Silas for this new group to figure out a way to keep going forward and try to keep this Rockets team a contender.
Yeah, and I think Stephen Silas out of their candidates pool was the best combination of kind of modern basketball X's and O's intelligence and savvy blended with a personality that would mesh with the superstars that they have. And I think the challenge for Silas, like you said, I would describe him as mild mannered. He's not, mm-hmm. His dad was obviously a guy who had a really commanding presence and was a big, you could say, certainly if you played against him, he was intimidating. Whereas, Steven's not that type of guy. So I think the question is, what kind of authority will he have in a locker room that has some very strong veteran personalities? Obviously, Harden and Westbrook, PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon, Covington on down the list. And, one thing is Silas is smart enough to understand that's not his locker room. It's going to be James Harden's locker room. It's going to be Russell Westbrook's locker room. So, it's not necessarily his job to be the authority figure. It's his job to get the most out of that roster. And you do that by empowering the leaders to be leaders. But then he is a great offensive mind. He was a great offensive mind. That's the reason Rick Carlisle hired him to his staff in Dallas. I think certainly his experience working with Rick helped him. I'm sure that there's going to be some things that Rick did in Dallas that he's going to take down there to Houston with him. But he's a guy who players really like. I don't think it's a coincidence that soon after you reported the news, Woj, that there was a tweet from Luka Doncic congratulating him. And I think he's definitely somebody who will get along with the players on that roster, which, if we're being honest, I don't know if that would have been the case with Jeff Van Gundy. Now, it absolutely would have been the case with John Lucas, who those players in Houston love, and that's the reason that Lucas was in the conversation. But the hope for the Rockets now is that they'll be able to keep John Lucas on the staff. He was a director of player development under Mike D'Antoni. He could probably land in a more prominent role. And they're trying to build a really veteran, experienced staff to support Stephen Silas. And, they've talked to Nate McMillan. They've talked to Jeff Hornacek. They're really looking to have some experience and some head coaching experience to support a guy whose only head coaching experience was that time filling in for Steve Clifford when he was ill.
Tim, what is it like to coach the Rockets? What is it like to practice like Harden, Westbrook, like that team? Do you have to, as a head coach, work around how much they're going to practice, how much you can do with them? Especially with a new coach coming in now who'd like to come in, and it's going to be a very tight training camp and window, it appears. What are the challenges? Are there unique challenges to coaching the Rockets in that respect?
Well, I think there's going to be unique challenges with any superstars. I mean, are there unique challenges to coaching Kawhi Leonard and Paul George with the Clippers? Yeah, absolutely. And perhaps, you know, some of those challenges are why Doc Rivers is now with the Sixers. You know, I only know the Rockets from an up-close perspective during the D'Antoni years. During the D'Antoni years, they did away with shoot-arounds. You know, their practices were essentially shoot-arounds. You know, they didn't go hard in practice. But I will say that James Harden had to be talked into that. You know, I think it's something that Chris Paul actually originally pushed for, with doing away with the shoot-arounds, and Harden had to be talked into that. Matter of fact, Harden still goes to the gym every game day morning and puts him, you know, John Lucas and some other coaches put him through a really extensive, about 45 minute to an hour, individual shooting session. And he's a guy who, his post-practice shooting sessions are similarly, extensive. He's a guy who doesn't miss games unless he absolutely has to. Mm-hmm. And they have to kind of talk him out of the gym. You know, sometimes maybe he has to be talked out of the club as well, but he has to be talked out of the gym. So I don't think the challenge will be if he wants to amp up the practice intensity. I don't think Harden would be the challenge there. You know, Westbrook is a guy who for several years in Oklahoma City, he basically got to make the schedule. I don't think at this point in his career, he is a guy who necessarily wants to be going through a grind practice-wise. But look, Silas is going to, let's be honest, he needs to figure out what they want and work mm-hmm. around that. That's just that, and that's when you have guys who are a dozen plus years into their career when they've been MVPs, perennial all-stars, that's just the way it is.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I want to hit on this, Tim. Ryan Smith is going to be the new owner of the Jazz. He and his wife, Ashley, they're from Salt Lake. They're from Utah. He grew up a Jazz fan, worked in software, started a company, made a gazillion dollars, sold it, and then spent $1.66 billion, I'm told, to buy the Jazz, buy the arena, buy the AAA baseball team. Mm-hmm. There and the whole sports group that the Miller family had. But, you know, people think of the Miller family owning the Jazz, and you go back, Larry Miller was kind of the original Mark Cuban in that he was the guy you saw courtside, and he was chest bumping Karl Malone and John Stockton. He was a very prominent owner with the Jazz. And, you know, over the last, I guess it was, I think I had in the story since 89-90, the second winningest organization in all of the NBA behind the Spurs. And Larry Miller died a number of years ago, and Gail Miller kept that team and her sons. And it's been a model of consistency. They haven't won a championship, but it's really the only thing
right.
They haven't done. 9 division titles in their run, and I think 16 50-win seasons in 35 years. That's remarkable in a place that's not a free agent destination, where they've always drafted well and made smart deals. And now 35 years into it, they're selling the team. It'll get approved by the Board of Governors. And Ryan Smith comes in and takes over a very stable situation. You have a very good roster. Your two best players, Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, are both up for extensions this summer. I don't even know when we are. This
right.
fall. Next right. week, the week after, November. Yeah.
Whenever that's possible.
Whenever that is. And Quinn Snyder recently signed a new deal, and Dennis Lindsay moved up to president, Justin Zanuck, the GM. And so they're very well positioned to continue to be chasing 50-win seasons in Utah. But I think in a lot of ways, in the history of the Utah Jazz, that the Miller family saved the team there. It was the mid-80s. There was some thought that they might have to, there were some financial problems. They might sell to a group. Somebody, they could have sold previous owners could have sold to a group and maybe moved them out of there. And that family stabilized the organization and then, you know, made it among the league's elite. It's really not an ownership group probably people talk a lot about, but I think they hired great people. They let them do their jobs. And, you know, I think it's they're a pretty good model for how to run a team.
No question. And look, the Miller family, you know, that is Utah. I mean, you can't turn a corner in Utah without, you know, being reminded of the Miller family. And obviously the Jazz are the number one reason of that. And Ryan Smith he's the right guy for the Miller family to pass the torch to because he's Utah as well. There's no way the Miller family sells this franchise to somebody who maybe had eyes on Las Vegas or Seattle or fill in the blank, whatever city you want to bring up. There was no way that the Miller family was going to have any question about the Jazz's stability in terms of staying in Salt Lake City. And, you know, again, this is a guy who grew up in Utah, has been a Jazz fan from the time he knew how to tie his shoes. And so if I'm in Utah as a Jazz fan, I'm really excited about this because, in a lot of ways, it's a continuation of the stability there. There's no question about whether you're going to lose your team. But I also think, you know, this is a 40-year-old self-made billionaire, passionate fan who, you know, I would expect him to kind of come in there, excited, you know, new, fresh blood. And, you know, I think a lot of the questions about the Miller family, and look, when you're in a small market, there's going to be times you need to tighten the belt. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, this new self-made billionaire coming in there with a fan's perspective, if that didn't kind of reinvigorate things from a from the perspective of really going all in on Jason's success on the court.
Yeah, and I think this is a difficult. In some ways, it's a difficult time to own a team. There's no revenue coming in. Zach Lowe and I had a story today about the projections that the revenue from last season, the league. It was down 10%. They lost, like $800 million in marketing and sponsorships. They lost $800 million in gate receipts. Another $400 million in marketing and sponsorships, and then $200 million from China that they think probably turns around this year because they're back on television there. But they've still got to work out a deal with the players to get the season started by December 22nd, which is what the league would like. They want to be done by mid-July before the Olympics to allow players to go play in the Olympics, to not have to go up against the Olympics in television, and to not push the NBA playoffs deep into the summer because this past year showed you like maybe there's not an appetite for that.
They want to get back on track from a mm-hmm. calendar standpoint because the late summer and certainly early fall are not the time for the NBA playoffs. And look, there's a lot of reasons to be concerned if you're an NBA owner about the finances, at least for the next year going forward, simply because who knows when or if they're going to be able to have fans this season. But still, you've got a team, kind of the epitome of a small market team selling for $1.6 billion. So, I don't know how to play a violin, but if I did, I wouldn't do it for NBA owners.
Well, I think what it shows is the NBA is still a good long-term play to buy a team. That team may be worth a lot more than that. And I think also that the Jazz weren't out on the open market. This was a conversation. Ryan Smith was a corporate partner. He had the patch. They did a, you know, essentially a cancer charity patch on the Jazz uniform the last few years that raised over $25 million. So there was a relationship there. I don't know how hard they ground them on the price. Maybe they could have gone outside and there's somebody who might have paid more. Maybe he would have paid more if he had to compete on the open market. But that's not what Gail Miller was looking for. She right. did a deal with somebody she felt comfortable with. She wasn't looking to sell a team. He came to her. Maybe it was on her mind and he made it easy to do. But I think around the league right now, this is a time, the Players Association is still talking through it on their side. about the idea of a pre-Christmas start. I know there are some players, especially players who went deep in the playoffs in the bubble, the Lakers, some others who, you know, their offseason is just going to be shorter than everybody else's, who would prefer it. They don't start till mid-January. Mid-January is difficult financially for the league, I think, to remember. This is a 50-50 split, and whatever the revenues are, the players' contracts and their pay, when the TV, you know, back several years ago when the new TV deal came in and the league got flooded with money, well, the salary spiked. And now, like, it goes the other direction when there's not revenue. And so I do think in the end that probably the league's going to get what they want here and get this thing started earlier. We're going to go from the draft on November 18th right into free agency, right into training camps, and ideally a December 21-22 start. And you're going to see a very different – I think one thing that's going to be interesting this year, and we talked about it in the story a little bit, Tim, and I'm curious your thoughts on it. Because there may not be fans, or certainly not going to be fans initially. Right. They want to eventually get to it. But the idea of having to balance the schedule out and have, let's say, every star in the league hit every market. You want to make sure Luka Doncic gets to New York. You want to make sure Steph Curry gets to Atlanta. Whomever it is, LeBron, play, you want him to play everywhere. That's going to be less important if there's no fans, and you're going to see a schedule that reflects that more intra-conference within your own conference, and more some just sort of geographic games where you go into a marketplace and play all of those opponents at once versus, you know, you're not going to make two trips to New York or two trips to LA. And I think and that's why the league is talking also about doing the schedules in halves, give you half the schedule initially and then sort of see where it looks at the midpoint of the season. You may have lost games because of the virus. You may have had outbreaks where games get postponed, or you look at adjustments you might make in the schedule. So this is all going to look, I think, well, it is going to look very different.
Yeah. And obviously this is a unique year, kind of that baseball style scheduling that you're talking about, it's going to be interesting to me to see if that's something that, you know, maybe not as extreme as it'll be this year, but if that's something that they implement going forward, because, you know, not only does that obviously help kind of minimize as much as possible the risk of the coronavirus risk, but, you know, as Dennis Lindsay and several other executives have mentioned, since the restart, what they realized, or what they, you know, got hard evidence of inside the bubble, was just how much reducing travel, or obviously in the bubble, eliminating travel, benefited players from a health and performance standpoint. So, you know, I think that's something that the league is going to have to consider going forward. And, you know, how much would it hurt attendance if, you know, for example, if the Mavericks went down to San Antonio and played a Friday Sunday in San Antonio, does that hurt attendance there as opposed to splitting those two games up? And, you know, and at some point, is how much would probably, if anything, a minor financial impact be worth it when maybe you're going to make some of that money back reducing travel anyways? And it just, if you're benefiting your product, and more importantly, you know, you could very well be extending careers by reducing the travel wear and tear on these players' bodies.
It's going to be, Tim, a wild season in a lot of ways. Having to operate outside of the bubble, that's initially the plan, and trying to navigate that and figure out a way to, you know, keep stars on the court and, you know, do it in 72 games. And they still have work to do with the Players Association to get this going. But there is a real significant concern, and rightly so, within the league about if you just don't have fans for a very long time. You know, people's habits change, and their what they do with their free time, what they do with their extra money. We are in a significant economic downturn, obviously. Who knows when we get out of it? It's certainly running concurrently with a virus that this country just has not shown an ability, a government that hasn't shown an ability to get serious about trying to contain. And so I think the economy is going to run parallel to that, to those issues. And for the, like every other business, I think for the NBA, this is going to be a really trying year economically. Small market teams worried about no revenue sharing from the big markets. The big markets worried about no fans, no luxury suites. You know, certainly some of the big market owners who might have just who are just written in some cases just have more wealth and have banked more money owning these teams in many cases. You know, like it's going to be it's just going to be a trying year for everybody.
Well, and all those things get back to why that Christmas or just pre-Christmas start is so important, and why, you know, really, I mean, with these players, at some point the money's not just going to talk, but it's going to scream. And just the importance of having that Christmas showcase from a, you know, just from a financial standpoint, the importance of getting the schedule back on track when you see how rough the ratings are, you know, deep into the summer or into fall. You know, there, I mean, before the bubble, there was some talk of, hey, you know, this, maybe the NBA calendar shifts on a regular basis. And I think now that they've seen, you know, they've seen how that goes, you know, you don't hear a lot more of that discussion. So, well, you know, these are things that, and, you know, at some point it's a business. And I think that the players are probably going to have to come around, and it's not necessarily ideal. It's certainly not ideal. But I just, you know, the other options I think are less appealing.
Absolutely. And I think financially, the players are going to take a big hit on this year. Again, it's a 50-50 split. The revenue without fans, that is an automatic 40% off the top of game night receipts and all the other things that go with it. And then there's ancillary losses financially. And so players' contracts, they're not going to pay what they thought they signed for. That's not what they're going to get this year. The league hopes that it'll be an aberration, that they'll be able to be back to full strength in 21-22. But I don't know. We all thought the pandemic might be over by now too. So what do we know? Tim, awesome to catch up, man. We will talk soon. And there's a lot more coming here quickly in the league. Appreciate you taking time out as always, man.
Appreciate you having me, Woj.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, ESPN's NBA reporter, Tim McMahon. You can listen to new and archived episodes of the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to also listen to the Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst and, of course, the Low Post with Zach Lowe. We'll catch you next time.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.